Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas. Je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours. Et ça me fait quelque chose.
In what must have been quite a 1-2 punch for the French last month, Finance Minister Christine Lagarde proposed some things shocking to the French, both a tax cut and a different kind of work ethic. More work. Enough thinking already, she said. Roll up your sleeves. You can translate that later into French for us. Guess what her boss's nickname is? The American. Good morning, I'm Marty Goldenson in for Brian Lehrer. While some of us here in America may envy France's legally mandated 35-hour work week and a health system portrayed so reverently in Michael Moore's Sicko, well, as it turns out, some French people think that America, which with its focus on personal wealth and short summer vacations, is a wonderful role model. So this morning we're asking the question, why is the government of President Nicolas Sarkozy asking the French to abandon their national habit of thinking? Sacre bleu. Time to roll down your mind and get to work, I guess he's saying. Here now to discuss this are two guests. Christopher Dickey is Paris Bureau Chief for Newsweek magazine. Welcome. Nice of you to fly in just for this conversation.
Just for this.
And Pascal Richard, who is normally here in New York to make the conversation more interesting, has flown out to Paris. Nice of you to join us.
Thank you.
Pascal is Editor-in-Chief of the U.S.-based France Amérique magazine. Christopher and Pascal, welcome back to WNYC. I think my first time with you, but you're a regular with Brian, no?
Yeah.
Every so often.
Good, good. So before we get started, I'd love to open the phones up on this one so listeners have a chance to talk about this, especially if you've lived or worked in France or you're French and living here. Should France be emulating us or should we be here living the life of France, the vie française? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can make a comment on our webpage, Safe Behind Your Computer, by going to WNYC.org and clicking on The Brian Lehrer Show. There's a page right there. Just click on it and you'll be able to add your comment, and I'll see it right here in front of me. So let me start with you, Christopher. Do the French really prefer debate to action? To what extent is this a myth, or to what extent is this sort of shortcut into some cultural difference?
I think that that the French really do love to talk. They really love to play with ideas, to turn things around in a conversation, to go 1, 2, 3 points, to lay it all out. They're schooled in that kind of intellectual process, and they really do get into it all the time. It's hard to make a proposition in France without people saying, well, stop, let's really think about that, let's consider it. And it is true that there are times when there's so much consideration, action seems to take a back seat. And that's exactly what Christine Lagarde was talking about when she said, you know, enough thinking. Every major ideology has probably got its roots in France. Our libraries are full of people thinking. Now's the time to roll up our sleeves and get to work. And I think that's the whole theme of the Sarkozy administration, as a matter of fact.
Pascal Richard, is that how you read it?
Yes, I think, first of all, you have to see that Christine Lagarde is really the American of the government. She was a lawyer at Baker McKenzie for many years, so she's really somebody who understands the American way of working. But I would like to
Do you really mean understands it, or do you mean captivated by it, or captive of it?
Well, she's probably captivated by it, and maybe not all the friends are, that's true. But I would like to add that Nicolas Sarkozy's book, Témoignage, which was published recently, is the bestseller of the summer. He has been selling 300,000 copies. So he's not only somebody with action, he's somebody also who has ideas, and people are reading his ideas.
I mean, this notion that Sarkozy is somehow not an intellectual, not a thinker, not a writer, unlike the three previous premiers is really wrong, right?
Well, it's wrong on a couple of counts. First of all, Chirac was not exactly, President Chirac, the predecessor, was not exactly an intellectual. He loved to project himself as being something of a common man, drinking beer and You know, he'd like to talk sometimes about how he worked on a Howard Johnson's in the United States in his college days. But Sarkozy, it's a very calculated effort to say, I'm not an intellectual. He is systematically opposing himself to the image of the intellectual. So, for instance, when he was asked what he was listening to on his earphones the other day when he was running around Lake Winnipesaukee up in New Hampshire, another point that he's taking his vacation in America, he said he was listening to Johnny Hallyday, Elvis Presley, and Celine Dion. Not, he could have said he was listening to Mozart, but he certainly did not say that.
You know, after what happened to Tony Blair, this is dangerous. You could become a French poodle to George
Well,
Bush.
You know, a lot of people have asked that question, whether Sarkozy is going to become not only the new, but the only one left, the only poodle left, because he is very, very consciously pro-American in a lot of what he does and a lot of his image making. But I think part of that is just to shake up the French.
Yeah, I think he's not really opposing intellectually. He's opposing himself. He's not part of the. He didn't go to the school, the École Nationale d'Administration, that many people who are in politics did in France. And I think he's opposing this way of thinking, this caricatural way of thinking. That's more.
Let's sort of drill down into this a little bit to see if there's a connection. One could say, on the surface, that you know the French are very productive. They're as productive workers per hour as here, right?
Yes.
Right. So one of the highest productivity, actually, in Europe.
Yeah.
In
per hour.
Yeah. So you know, this idea that somehow there's a relationship between the way you think or how you think and your productivity. I mean, you could say that these are separate issues. Why would Lagarde say something about we have to stop thinking and do more action? How are those connected? And why would one? Why didn't she, you know, we have to stop, you know, vacationing or something? Why go to the sort of heart of the intellectual culture?
I think, first of all, we have to say that it's not all the French who are not working. That's really a caricature. The 35-hour week was created by the socialists to try to fight unemployment. The idea that if the hour, you didn't work so much, you were creating jobs for others was a theory taken into action, and the results are not there. But it's not the French who decided to work less. It was a decision of the politics.
Well, right there you have the idea that you can take this theory that you reduce the work week to 35 hours and that will increase employment. There's an intellectual concept that's totally nuts, actually, but it was an intellectual concept. It was turned around. There was all this cogitation and debate about it. Finally, the socialists did it as if it was an intellectual triumph, and in fact, it was a completely implausible plan and has slowed down the economy terribly.
Yeah, actually, I went to the political science school like Nicolas Sarkozy did, and we, for hours, we studied the theory of, less working hours for a better employment.
And were you convinced when you were in school, Pascal?
Not really, actually, because now I live in America and I work in America, so I guess I was not really convinced.
Well, in a minute, I want to go forward to this question of, you know, unemployment in France, and callers have some questions about that. But just want to explore for another second this issue of the cultural difference, because my daughter, for example, you know, in college, you majored in philosophy and, you know, at a fairly elite school. And, you know, in France, you got to take philosophy in high school. It's and you have to, right? It's embedded in the culture. So isn't it sort of a profound difference to go after this as some kind of distraction from being modern, efficient?
I think really the key here, as far as the Sarkozy administration is concerned and Christine Lagarde and the others who are talking this way, it's a question of sort of national energy and the environment, the energetic environment or lack of it that exists in France. There's a strange kind of complacency in France. It's especially in Paris, a beautiful city, wonderful to be in. Americans love to go there. It's a great respite from all the pressures of living in New York, for instance. But it doesn't have a lot of energy. Maybe it's because of the beauty and all the intellectualism and the literature, but there's a kind of a complacency in French society, and it's a little bit like living in an environment where you hear Mozart all the time. Eventually it starts to sound like elevator music. They want to get real energy into French society. And so they want to see it more competitive, more aggressive, internally and externally. And I think that's what they're pushing for. It's not really an attack on intellectualism, but it is an attack on complacency.
Michael from Brooklyn, why don't you jump in this conversation with Christopher Dickey, who is the Paris bureau chief for Newsweek magazine, and Pascal Richard, who's on the phone from France. He's editor-in-chief of the U.S.-based France Amérique.
Hi, Christopher and Pascal. My name is Michael. I studied a year in Paris at Sciences Po. And I think what struck me a lot as far as looking at my colleagues who are French was the unemployment rate for teenagers and then for 20-somethings and 30-somethings. What do you think could be done in Sarkozy's early days here to try to particularly get the youth working? And do you think it has to do with the educational system that makes students kind of choose a path so early on in high school?
Well, I think the first reform that was actually voted is a reform of universities in France, so that's very important. Universities are going to have their own budget. They will be able to invest that money more like American universities. So I think that would be helpful to for universities to raise money and eventually to help students go through their studies.
You sort of take this. It sounds like a big change, but I don't fully understand it. The way the money is distributed now, it represses a kind of creativity in the French educational system.
Well, now it's mostly state run. So now they will have their own budget. They will be autonomous, so they can invest in projects. They can have more relationship with universities abroad in Europe or other places. And so the students will be able to. They already can through this the exchange of Erasmus, where they can go from one university to another in Europe. But then the European university will be more competitive, I think.
Well, I think there's a problem with the expectations when you get out of school. It's not just what you learn when you're in school. The whole system in France is structured. So you're supposed to have a job and you're supposed to keep that job for a very long time. The idea that you're going to go from one job to another, working your way up, is still fairly alien in French society. So, for instance, when there was an effort to reform the labor laws for young people last year, there were huge protests. Now, the whole idea was to make it easier to hire young people. But what the young people said was, we don't want to be hired if we can be fired 2 years later. And there are practical reasons for that, too, because if that's the case, they'll have trouble renting apartments, they'll have trouble getting credit, they'll have trouble doing all the things that you need to build a life. The whole system is structured in a way that militates against flexibility, and that's one of the reasons the unemployment rate has stayed high for so long.
I want to bring another listener in. I'm Marty Goldenson, by the way, in for Brian Lehrer. France is calling, and I'm not being too general. Go ahead.
Hi. I live here in the United States, and I've been living here for the past 11 years, but I did all my schooling in France, and I am now a public school teacher in the U.S., and I think that everything that is being said today is very true, and it rings very true to me.
What part of it rings true?
The part about the schooling and what schools are training the French students versus what schools are training American students to do. For instance, I had 8 hours of philosophy weekly in 12th grade as a student in France, and I am now facing American public school students who, they would not even conceive of that. And I think that the American system is very much geared towards what can you do, how is that going to be helpful for your life, very pragmatic, and in France we're not there yet.
Yeah, at the same time, I was at the Monoprix yesterday, which is the food supermarket in France, and you have poems by Verlaine written on the walls, and I thought that was quite wonderful that you can go shopping and still read poems by Verlaine. So maybe we shouldn't go all the way to being into action and reject all intellectuals, French intellectuals.
Well, I mean, how many people in America admit to being intellectuals? When was the last American you met and you say, oh, how do you see yourself? Oh, well, I see myself as an intellectual.
It's not done.
No, it's absolutely not done.
I was thinking about this last night, that how different that is, that in France, thinking is considered an activity.
And a class. Yeah. It's a whole class of people who see themselves and are seen as intellectuals. Here, it's maybe even a dirtier word than liberal. You just can't be one.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I was a kid, of course, thinking was not considered activity at all. If baseball was considered an activity, and if you were one of those kids who played with primitive computers or flip-flops in those days, you were a nerd. Now it's a little different because the nerds have taken over, so that activity.
But they still don't call themselves intellectuals.
No.
They'd rather be called nerds.
But it's an activity to sit in front of a computer at Google now, and it's considered high class. But still, it's practical. It's part of the economy, not part of cogitation.
Right.
Yeah.
I would like to add that there is a kind of paradox here there in France, because everybody is thinking a lot, having opinions on all issues, discussing. But intellectuals, and I'm thinking about university professors, for example, are not as respected in France as they are in the United States. Their wages are not very high, and very often they are not associated to the making of politics. So it's also paradoxical there.
I wanted to go to Rashid in Brooklyn for a second, because maybe he can ask the right question to connect this corporate issue of productivity and intellectualism. Rashid?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Just a quick observation and then a question. My observation is that I think in America we tend to separate intellectualism from, I guess, everyday governance, whether it's corporate or, federal governance. Like, there's this notion that we're built on a society of, like, pragmatism and practicality. But my experience has been that that's absolutely not true. Like, for instance, people that I know that work as anthropologists work for corporations, and their job is to connect, like, issues of postmodernity to, like, advertising. The same thing goes on, like, with people that I know that have degrees in philosophy that work for the State Department. You know, they've studied postmodernism, Derrida, Foucault, and they sort of use that to, sell our American message abroad.
So you think we're secretly intellectual?
Oh, we are. But what happens is that there's a disconnect between the public and the private. You know, so for instance, someone like Donald Rumsfeld probably has no idea who Derrida is, but I guarantee that people that work in mid-level, positions in corporate America or in the State Department or Defense Department know all about this stuff.
And look where it's led us.
In France, they're more upfront about it. Like, if you go to an upper-middle-class educated household and you look at their bookshelf, you'll see Foucault, you'll see Derrida. Over here, it's a little bit different. We don't formally admit it in the public sphere.
Christopher Dickey?
Well, there's also a kind of a rigidity in France. While you're teaching those 12th graders 8 hours of philosophy a week, you're also creating a situation where you're saying, this is the way to think. This is the way it's done. I mean, one of the most common phrases you hear in France is, c'est pas correct. It's not the right way to do things. And that kind of rigidity is another thing that I think the Sarkozy people are rebelling against.
I agree. I think the one thing the Sarkozy people are trying to do is also to change the mentality of the French towards money. And I think that's quite important.
Yeah, greed is good.
Greed is, I don't know if greed is good, but having money, you shouldn't feel guilty if you have money. And in a way, the fact that the President Sarkozy is today in the United States in a expensive house, I understand, and next to his friend Arnaud Lagardère is also renting a house there. It's been a big, big discussion here in France.
Look, where did that come from, Christopher Dickey? This idea that having one should be ashamed of too much stuff, and also that work itself is not a good thing, but something that's, should be avoided.
Well, I think the aversion is to the idea of materialism. I mean, America is an incredibly materialistic society. Everything we talk about is what we have. We have families, we have jobs, we have an education, we have everything. France still comes from a society where you're supposed to be belonging to something. You belong to a family, you belong to a history, you belong to a faith, you belong to a culture. And that's a big contrast in the two. So when you try to take this society of having, the values of having, and impose them on France, people resist. But in the modern world, you've got to go that way. It's a material world.
Peter in Brooklyn, you had a comment?
Yeah, he had quoted the French minister, I forget her name, as saying that, why you were posing the question, why did she say less thinking and not
Lagarde,
vacationing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the reason is clear, that it's the intellectuals and their elitism, which is real, are a much more palatable political target. I mean, imagine if she'd said less vacationing.
Yeah.
In France, you'd have a million people in the streets. I mean, that's another cultural difference that I think French people are much more likely to go out and protest when someone, you know, it's seen as a threat to either their desires or the way they live. And I guess one other thing I'd like to invite comment on briefly is people have been talking about Sarkozy for a while, and no one's mentioned him referring to the North African immigrant rioters and their children as scum. And I guess what I'd like to suggest is I don't think it's all going to be smooth sailing for Sarkozy.
Is there a connection between this message of, you know, work more, think less, and the whole immigration question just raised? Does this speak in some ways to this new group of partially unemployed new people, immigrants? Here's what I was thinking, and
okay. See
if it makes any sense to you, but that it's hard to become French. In France, they expect you to become French. They want you to be
completely French.
Yeah, they don't want you to wear any different kind of veil. They want you to be French. And it seems to me maybe this is an example of let's be more like the rest of the world and meet those people who are coming in halfway, which they make the culture more like other international global cultures that are not so focused on their internal culture, but focused on the capitalist culture, which is more accessible because everyone speaks the same language.
I would like to add that, you know, I was reading Nicolas Sarkozy's book, and there is one sentence. In one sentence, he says, it's not for the people, the French people, to change. It's for the politics to change. We have to explain. We have to communicate. And coming back to the reform of youth jobs that he tried to do a couple of years ago, and there were so many riots, it was also because it was not really explained and communicated. And I think that he's trying to change that. He's explaining everything. If he goes on vacation in the States, you know, he's going to do a press conference to explain why he's there and that it's not a problem or whatever. So I think the relationship between the elite and the people is changing through Sarkozy.
You know, reading on the blogosphere, we came across this in response to Lagarde's comments about, you know, think less, you know, work more. Quote, I tend to think she is right to suggest that work can have a certain dignity and that the French too often overlook this, conditioned by 19th century literature to regard money as filthy, labor as contemptible, and money-making as unrepublican. It is true that you would have this impression if force-fed Germinal for your Bach by some bitter and twisted teacher functionary. little Zola here, right?
Yeah.
Little Zola lesson. Is there any truth to this? Do French people think that there's something shameful about being financially well-off? Is that embedded in the culture somewhere?
It used to be fairly apparent. It's less apparent now. I mean, 20 years ago, there was almost a uniform for French businessmen of a blue cloth coat. People only drove cars that were dark-colored, and they rarely drove cars like Mercedes and never a Rolls-Royce or a Bentley. All of that has changed over the last several years, and you see a lot more conspicuous consumption than you used to. But, of course, there's also functional reasons. A lot of people don't pay taxes on all of their income in France, and the last thing you want to do is attract attention to that fact by conspicuous consumption.
Yeah,
yeah, but you're raised in France, so you're not supposed to talk about money. This is considered as very rude to mention money in a conversation.
Also, you're not supposed to ask people, what do you do?
What do you do? Of course, this is all taboo.
That's interesting. That's the first question in America.
No.
What do you do? So what is the first question in France?
The first question is, what do you think, you know? What ideas do you have?
There's the problem.
And then
where do you come from in terms of region? You know, that's another important thing.
Mm. In New York, it's how much is your rent?
Yeah. Right. No, nobody talks about that in France.
Yes. Eric in Manhattan, you're a Sarkozy fan?
Yes, I am. I'm actually very keen on... Can you hear me?
Yes, just fine. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think it's actually rather refreshing. I wanted to bring up a different cultural vantage point, and that is myopia. There's a certain degree of parochial demeanor in much of French culture that I think Sarkozy is trying to attack or assail. which is quite refreshing. In America, there's a broad range of perspectives or a welter of views. And despite all the subscription to a liberalism or an acceptance of a welter of views, there really is not as much as I've seen in America. And I just wanted to see if you can comment on that.
That's exactly right. That is precisely one of the things he's attacking, what's called the pensée unique, the single thought or single idea, because even with all this intellectualism and the respective intellectuals, there's also a sort of a social consensus that there's a certain way you're supposed to think about certain issues. For instance, at the time there was the great debate about the extent to which Europe should be integrated, it really was unacceptable to say, no, I don't think really France should be part of the European Union, or I don't think this will be such a great idea for France. That was completely unacceptable. If you said that, you were going to be ostracized from a conversation, and you were deemed a Le Pen supporter or some lunatic. And that's exactly what Sarkozy is trying to fight against. That's one of the important things that he's against. He's also against the mentality of May 1968. He's against a lot of things like that. But the pensée unique is definitely something that he's trying to eliminate, and I think the caller is exactly right about that.
We're almost out of time, so I just want to make sure I understand this. Would it be right, both of you, and I'm addressing Christopher Dickey, who is the Paris bureau chief of Newsweek, and Pascal Richard, who is the editor-in-chief of France Amérique. Would it be right to summarize all this by saying that Sarkozy wants to change the culture and make it more American because he sees Americans as sort of getting on the horse and doing the work and, you know, pulling the plow, and that the French, forgive me, put Descartes before the horse?
Could be. I think that's exactly right. I don't think we should overstate his pro-American attitudes. I think there could be a lot of frictions with America over the long term, but on all kinds of policy issues. But he definitely wants to give them a kick in the rear.
A final word, Pascal?
Yeah, I think he's been an admirer of America. That's true, and it's interesting. We are celebrating on September 6th the 250th anniversary of Lafayette, and for maybe the first time a French president is taking his vacation in the United States. So I think it says something about the Franco-American relationship, which is really in a positive track, I think.
Well, that's a good thing. I'm going to start eating French fries again. My guests have been Christopher Dickey, Paris bureau chief for Newsweek magazine, and Pascal Richard, the editor-in-chief of the U.S.-based France Amérique magazine. Christopher and Pascal, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Il me l'a dit.